Troy Dodds, and welcome to the On The Record podcast presented by The Western Weekender. On this podcast, I'm joined by special guests who all have such great stories to tell about Penrith and the role they've played in our city. They are Penrith stories told by Penrith's people. Today, my special guest is Gina Field. Gina is the owner of Nepean Regional Security, a business she's run for more than a quarter of a century. She's become a prominent business person in Penrith, winning many awards and inspiring other women in business along the way. Gina, thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much, Troy, for having me and the opportunity.
First question we always ask, where and when were you born? Where did you grow up?
I was born in Sydney Women's Hospital. When? 1968. So it's a very long time ago. And I grew up in Canterbury.
Okay. What was Canterbury like in growing up in the early 70s?
It was interesting. It certainly wasn't as rough as I believe it is now. Mm. It was a really nice community. And it wasn't until my parents decided to buy in Penrith many moons ago when housing was very cheap. I think they only paid $86,000 for house and land back then in Emu Heights. And I always thought, you know, Emu Heights was like almost traveling to America. It was that far away. Cool. And then I moved in with them and moved to Penrith.
So when was that? When did Penrith first come into your life?
Oh, that would have been probably about 35 years ago, I would say. Yeah.
Very different back then than it is today.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the M4 finished at Emu Plains. It didn't continue on. And then we used to have to go up the old Bathurst Road and go around the back way to get up the mountains. So that's how long ago it was.
Yeah, very, very different. What kind of student were you at school?
I always got on my report card, she talks too much, and I was always the class clown. And I would always, the teacher would be saying, be quiet, Gina, be quiet. And I'd always sit up the back. But however, saying that, I was always, I believe, a model student because I was one of those people that collected the roll, the folder, so the roll call could be called out. And I was always the person that collected all the lunches when they used to write on the brown paper bags. Yes, and then we'd go and pick it up. And I think a sausage roll was like 15 cents back then. So I think I was a model student, but I did like talking a bit.
What about career aspirations? Did you have any during high school? Did you kind of know what you wanted to do?
I've always been a person that liked authority. So I thought I'd either go in probably the army, the police. I never thought of security whatsoever, maybe ambulance, because I've always been an extremely regimented person. And I'm very, very scheduled. And I do like discipline. I was brought up in a very disciplined family.
I was going to say, where does that come from? So that's upbringing-wise?
Yeah, Dad. So Dad was German.
Okay.
And Germans back then were very, very disciplined with their children. And also my father owned a butcher shop. So I used to work in the butcher shop every Saturday and in the afternoon, sweeping up all the wood carvings and cleaning, you know, the chopping tables. And so that made me very disciplined and hardworking, I believe.
What about upon leaving school? What's the first job, or where do you head to after school?
So I was working in a hardware store in the afternoons and on weekends. While I was at school, I was working for BBC Hardware. That doesn't exist anymore.
Okay. In Penrith?
No, it was in Belmore.
Okay.
Yeah. So this fellow used to walk in on a regular basis, and he had a security uniform. And I said to him, wow, I never thought about security. Like, is that an authority role? Because I was really quite attracted to uniforms, authority, regiment. And he said, oh, yeah, it is. Oh, but women don't get employed as security officers. And I said, oh, really? That's interesting, isn't it? And the next day I started looking for jobs in the newspaper, and there was an advertisement for security officers, and I went for the job. I remember walking in, which was ironically where I was interviewed in, was a house that my best friend lived in growing up, and the bedroom, the room that I was interviewed in, was her room that we used to play in.
Okay.
I'm thinking, I know this house.
Yeah.
And it was a little bit of, there's three of them, three men. And they said to me, we're going to employ you because we think this is going to be a bit of a novelty, but you're very restricted to what you can do because women can't multitask. So there's only particular roles where we will send you, and we'll have to work out where we're going to send you.
At that point, is it something you're offended by, or are you just excited about the job? Like, what was your, how did you take that?
I think I was too young, because I was 19 at the time. I was too young to understand whether they were joking with me or whether I was offended. But exactly what you say, I just wanted to be a security officer, and I thought possibly that would be a stepping stone to getting into the army or the police and giving me the training. So I was just like, yeah, throw the uniform at me. And I was so excited, and I was thanking them and shaking their hands. And they said to me, I remember this fellow, he got my uniform, he said, look, because there's no women in security, or not many, I'm going to have to give you a man's uniform. And I went, great, excellent. So they gave me a pair of pants, a shirt and a tie. And I was so excited. And they sent me to a building in Circular Quay. And my job role was to sign people in and out. That's all I had to do.
Yep.
And I had to teach myself the 24-hour time. And I remember they said to me, you can sit down for the 12-hour shift. That's fine. Well, I went to sit down and I thought, oh, these pants are a bit tight. So I used to stand at attention in the foyer for 12 hours a day. And ironically, after that, I got employee of the month because I stood at attention for 12 hours a day. But what they didn't realize is the reason why I did it, because I was terrified of splitting my pants because they were so tight, because they were men's.
What about your colleagues during this time? Are they looking like, is this woman that's come into the fray? Or was there some respect there as well? This is late 80s, early 90s, Sydney.
Absolutely. Right. So it's 1988. So they're, you know, we're going through the phase where, you know, women had to stay in wedlock. You know, we're going into from the 70s to the 80s. So you're absolutely right. You know, we had to have certain conditions to be able to vote. So I've gone into a male-dominated industry. And while the guys really liked me, they were quite standoffish with me, and a lot of them reported that they didn't feel safe having me there because what if there's something goes on? How am I going to assist them in a fight and things like that? So all of these things came forward. But I don't know whether I should be proud of this, but I'll say it anyway. I was working at a construction site, so I was sent to a construction site.
Yeah.
And back in those days, women were not on construction sites whatsoever. So I was a female security officer, and on the port-a-loo block, they put a piece of cardboard with some string, and every time I had to use the toilet, I had to turn it to say woman, so none of the guys would go in. And I was working there for maybe 2 months, and I got on really well with the guys because I'm pretty easy to get along with, I think, anyway. And I remember all the guys walking past going, oh, thanks, Jean. Now, remember the late 80s, heavily unionized, massive unions. So, and they're walking past going, thanks, Jean, we're going to the pub, you're the best. And I'm thinking, what's going on? And next minute, the supervisor came up and I said, has there been a bomb threat? He said, I hate to do this to you, Gina, but I'm going to have to ask you to leave. The unions don't want a female on a construction site. We don't believe that you can do the job correctly. So I lost my job that day, not because of my skill, not because of anything that I've done. I did my job correctly simply because of the sex that I was born.
And this is early 1990s?
No, it was about 1989. No, so no, we're no. getting... So,
it's hard to believe, though. That's only 35 years ago.
I know, that's crazy. I know. Yeah. I know. And when I tell this story to people, they're like, are you... And I'm telling you the way it happened. You wouldn't believe it, would you?
That's pretty extraordinary. And as I say, pretty extraordinary that it's only 35 years ago, given how far we've come. You obviously continue in security jobs, though.
Yes.
Is there a moment on the job at any point, given you had this kind of trepidation from the men that you were around that are actually not up to the job, or what if there's a situation? Was there a moment where you felt, there you go, I just proved myself on the job? Was there something that, an incident that happened or something like that where you went, well, you know, proved you wrong there?
I did. I'm quite competitive, and I'm the sort of person, this is going back to my school days, when someone said that I basically couldn't do it, something, I'd set out to do it. And I suppose, look, from my perspective, I could look at these situations and experiences and have, you know, be bitter and twisted and want to try and be revengeful, but I'm actually quite thankful. And I know that just sounds a bit fluffy and, you know, cliche. I'm so thankful for it, but I am quite thankful because it did make me quite stronger and it wanted me to continue forward. And I remember there was particular job roles that I really wanted to do, and I kept on going for promotions, and I kept on, every time I saw that there was an internal promotion within this organisation, which I would happily retired in, I'd send it and I'd never hear anything back. And I remember ringing the control room and speaking to one of the controllers, and I said, "Did you get my promotion sort of application?" And this fellow said, "Look, I'm really sorry, but we're actually shredding them, because there's the job role that you're going for, which is a control room operator and mobile patrol officer, supervisor, you can't do mobile patrols, and women can't multitask, meaning you can't answer phones and write things down, because back in those days, everything was manual and handwritten or typewriter, going back, showing my age." So I remember saying to the boss at the time, "Can I please be a mobile patrol officer?" And he said, "Absolutely not. You know, we don't put females in those roles." And I thought, how am I going to get around this? So I remember talking to the guys, and I used to go out on my nights off and out in the mobile patrol vehicles, and I used to learn. I learned all the runs sort of basically in my own time on my nights off, unbeknownst to the boss.
Yeah.
So I remember one night, one afternoon, I walked in, and it was a Friday afternoon, and Brian, my boss, who's no longer with us, was swearing his head off. He was going off his dial, you know. And I said to him, "What's wrong, Brian?" And he says, "I'm short a patrol officer." And I said, "Okay, I'm going to come clean." I told him what I'd been doing, going out on my nights off with the boys, and I know the run. He says, "Right, there's a couple of things I'm going to do with you. First, you're going to get a written warning for going against policy. Second, grab a gun and load her up. And number three, here's the car keys, go and get going." So that was my start of being a mobile patrol officer. And I'm led to believe that I'm probably one of the first in New South Wales to actually do that job role.
Yeah.
And then they ended up assigning me to the King's Cross run.
Okay.
Now, you remember back in...
this is what, mid-90s King's Cross?
Mid-90s, you know, where this is hard and fast, you know, that it was hard and fast. So, and a couple of the sites that I had to call into were the brothels, and we had to check in and almost do welfare checks. Now, I'm a 20-year-old girl.
Mm.
There's no mobile phones. There's no communication besides a radio in the patrol vehicle. So once I left the patrol car... There was no communication. So here I was seeing things that were just phenomenal in that day and age. So I think I grew up really quick. And my mother was beside herself for doing this job. She's like, "Why can't you just do something normal, like be a secretary or a hairdresser, something normal? Mm. Why can't you do that?" But this is what I wanted to do, and I really enjoyed it.
You mentioned sort of growing up on the job, and I guess that it is a job that does that. You see things that that girl from Canterbury and just probably never would have experienced growing up at all, particularly in that regimented household that you mentioned.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I'd be walking, and I remember one particular... site that I went into, it was the working girls facility, and I remember walking up the stairs and all of these women just sitting on the stairs, and I remember one was pregnant, and you know, and I'm thinking, how do these people get into these situations? Mm. Like, here I am, I've been brought up in a fairly decent household. I mean, we weren't rich by all means. I mean, I was never silver spooned. I had to work very hard. But how did these girls that age get to that situation? And I remember thinking that. And I actually got to know a lot of the women in this facility. And ironically, a lot of them were in relationships or they were married.
Yeah.
And okay. I found that bizarre. Because what my perception was, you know, these women are single.
Sure, or, you know. Yeah. 1998 becomes a poignant year in your life, and I guess from disappointment comes opportunity. You are made redundant from your job. Do you remember that day and what happened around then?
So eventually ended up becoming an area supervisor, and they, and because my parents were living in Penrith, I was offered a job role in Penrith. And so I started managing the Penrith area for this particular company, and I actually grew the client base for them, so that it was actually quite a profitable area by the time that I'd sort of gone through the 5 or so years. And I remember it was a couple of days before Christmas in 1998, and I got this call on the radio, and I was doing mobile patrols, and he says, Papa 1 to Papa 2, 3. And I said, oh, wow, that's the big boss. It's Christmas. I'm going to get a promotion. Yeah. I'm going to get a Christmas bonus. I was so excited. And I remember he met me at a site in Penrith, and he says, Gina, the company has decided to franchise your run, and we're going to amalgamate it with 5 different areas. And I looked at him and he said, thank you so much for your services. You're actually going to be finishing up. And I was made redundant just before Christmas.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah. So here I was, I had no money. I had a shitbox of a car that, you know, I hardly started. And I had, you know, nowhere to go. I had no idea what I was going to do. So I remember on Christmas Eve, I drove around and I stuck Christmas cards under all the doors of the clients in Penrith that I used to look after, saying, thank you so much. I wish you all the best. I'm no longer with this particular organization. And I put my phone number on it. And there was a lady by the name of Helen Andrews from Rex Andrews Transport in Penrith, and she contacted me just after Christmas, and she said to me, what are you going to do? I said, I don't know, Helen. You know, there's not many job opportunities out there at the time, because employment, it was very difficult to get a job because people worked back then. And so she said, have you thought about starting your own company, and I'll be your first client? And I had no idea, never ran a business, never did business courses. I had absolutely, she even had to help me register my business name.
Sure, okay.
And she said, think about your business name. And I was driving along the Great Western Highway, and outside the Colleton Hotel was a sign that said, welcome to the Nepean region. And I thought, that's it. That's my company name, Nepean Regional Security. And that's when it was born, 1998, January.
Yep. And that's a poignant time for you, obviously, when you look back and go, well, now you can say, thank God I was made redundant before Christmas, I guess, because it, you know, had you not, had that not happened, then who knows? Because they're sliding doors kind of moments in your life.
Yeah, that's right. And I think I just basically did it so I could remain employed. So here I was, and I remember, thank God, I lived on a hill, and I had an old Holden Camira that would never start, and I used to have to clutch start it. So yeah. I'd have to put it in second gear and clutch start it down this hill to get this car going. And that's how I was doing mobile patrols. So I was doing mobile patrols. So I was working all night.
Yep. And you're on your own at this point.
I was on my own. There was no employees. So I was working all night, and then I'd have maybe 1 or 2 hours sleep in the morning, and then I'd get up. And this is in the old fax machine days and the yellow pages.
Yeah.
And I would, I had a piece of paper that I'd written on to introduce people to my company, and I'd stand there for 8-9 hours just dialing single numbers in and just putting the paper through the fax machine one after another just to introduce myself from the yellow pages. And that's how I... that's how I was building up my business. And more and more businesses came on board that I'd left Christmas cards under the door. And many of them are still with me today, 26 years.
Yeah, wow.
Yeah.
You you mentioned how there weren't too many women working in security, but I imagine at that point there wasn't too many women owning security companies either.
No. Well, I was led to believe again that I was one of the first females in New South Wales to solely and wholly own a security company back then as well.
You mentioned, though, that it felt like you were just doing it to stay employed. So then you must have a first employee, and that must really feel like a business then. Do you remember hiring that person and who it was?
Yes, Abdul. It was Abdul. He came along and he was my first employee. And it was just so I could have a night off. So he only did one night a week for me.
Yep.
And I was running the business from my home, and then I moved it to the garage. So he would come to my garage, pick up the mobile patrol vehicle, and then go and do the run just so I could have a rest. Because, you know, I was working literally night and day. I was living literally on 1-2 hours sleep a day, and that's how I was building up my business. And I remember vividly, I used to do a site out at Badgerys Creek called Borrell. And I'd go out there and I'd go to the site and I'd check it. And I remember driving down Elizabeth Drive, and it was the middle of winter, and I was starting to fall asleep. And I got out of the car and I went to the service station. I stuck my face under a tap, and it was like minus 2 degrees to try and keep myself awake.
Yeah.
And, you know, all these sacrifices that I did. And again, just thinking, I had no idea about business, about marketing.
Mm.
It was, you know, I didn't have the perks of social media back then.
Yep,
it was all manual and cold calling. And that's how I had to build my business up.
You'd already been through being an employee in security and having the difficulties around being a woman in a male-dominated industry. Did it feel like you were going through it all over again when clients would realise, oh, this isn't something I'm used to when talking to someone in this industry?
Yeah, well, yeah, exactly right. You're right. I used to go to meetings with clients and they say, oh, are you the salesperson for the organisation? I say, no, I'm the owner. And people were extremely hesitant, particularly when I was talking about electronic security. You know, we've got all these devices that I was talking about. You know, did this woman know what she was talking about? Was she selling, you know, did she know how to sell security products? How did she know? You know, like, this is just so surreal for them. So I had to prove myself a lot more because I was a woman, and which was very difficult to try and get business going.
What about the biggest growth period? Where did that come from? Where was there a period where you went, wow, this is actually starting to take off?
So in 2007, I was diagnosed with cervical cancer, and I was told that I had to take 3 months off, which I simply could not afford or do. So I literally worked all the way through all that. But it changed my mindset because, you know, being diagnosed with cancer, it certainly makes you start questioning your life, because I didn't know at what stage I was at or whether I was going to basically live or die. I had no idea.
Yeah.
So you start questioning your life. And I remember saying to myself, and this is a phrase that has stayed with me for 26 years now, or 20 years, never say never. What's the worst that could happen? Someone says no to you?
Mm.
So I saw a tender for the Sydney International Regatta Centre, Equestrian and the Shooting Centre. It was being advertised, and I thought, you know what? I got 2 or 3 people working for me. I'm going to apply for this tender. And I just put it all in there, and I got a letter, and I was shortlisted. And I thought, wow, okay. Well, I'm not going to get it. I'm too small. And I remember going to the panel interview and sitting there with... never dealt with government in my life, you know, never dealt with people at this level or hierarchy, you know. And I'm sitting there and they're really stone-faced at me and they're asking me all those questions. And I remember the fellow, he was so, and he says, Sir Gina, have you ever done anything of this capacity before? And my answer was, yes. And as Richard Branson says, you know, say yes and work around it as you go. And then they said to me, you know that we hold major events at these sites. Have you ever done major events? My answer, yes. So I was saying yes, and in the back of my mind I'm thinking, what the hell am I getting myself in for? So I remember I got the phone call and they said, congratulations, you've got the contract. So I picked up basically overnight 3 former Olympic venues like this.
Yeah.
Catapulted from 3 to 16 to 20 staff. I had to buy cars. I had to write procedures. And the incumbent was so upset by losing the contract that they decided that they didn't want to wait the 4 weeks. They wanted to pull the pin earlier. So I get the phone call going, Well, it's like this. We've actually got to start you a lot earlier. Now, here I am, never doing anything like this, dealing with a government department who wants policies, procedures, never written anything like that in my life, never had employers, so I had to interview, buy cars. It was frantic. And I actually had to dig deep into my savings so I could do all of this. So and I suppose I never thought about the finances, or I just did it. I just sort of, I just went out and bought stuff. And so the start date, would you believe, for these contracts was New Year's Eve. Right. So I had no...
Straight in, boom. Yeah.
So I had no government representation at these sites.
Yeah.
And I did it. I was exhausted. And hiring people and I didn't even have a uniform. Yeah. I had to design a uniform. I had to design a logo. I had nothing.
Yeah.
I didn't even have payroll. I didn't even know what super was, you know? So I remember standing at the Regatta Centre on the bridge, and you know the bridge there, and I looked up and the fireworks were going off and I went, I did it.
Mm.
I did it. And that's where my business started growing, and from there I went for more government tenders and more and I won the tender to the Greater Sydney Parklands and Parramatta Parklands Trust. I won the tender to Western Sydney Airport. I've got local government contracts, and all the way through this, I always hear businesses say to me, but I'm not big enough, I'm not ready, I don't have these facilities. I had nothing.
Yeah.
I had nothing in place. I was working from the garage of my house, and I just, so my, basically my payroll, my income went from $9,000 to over $1 million overnight.
Yeah.
That's how quick it was. Yeah. So then I also had to grow from that as well. And I moved out of the garage and into an office in Penrith, so to speak.
And very much became the go-to security business in the region. No question about that. Your role must have changed as well. I mean, you know, on the tools, so to speak, most of the time, then becoming, I guess, the HR manager almost, because you've got, you know, you start to put more and more employees on. And I know you've always remained on the ground, which I think is a great part of your business. But how did you find the challenge from going, what I actually loved was the security, doing the actual job, and now I'm kind of managing the business, you know, most of the time?
Very difficult. It was really, really difficult for me to transition to having to do, lots and lots of paperwork and admin, which I absolutely despise. And you're right, my love is for doing security.
Mm.
So I think back then I started to get a little bit depressed because of it, and I really wanted to be out on the field and have the time. And I think people think I'm a bit of a freak show because I'm still doing 70, 80 hours a week, and I still and make sure that I maintain being on the tools. But I'm also getting, from that, I get a lot of satisfaction because I love doing security work. But from that as well, I'm showing my people that I'm leading by example. And if they're out in 43 degree heat at an event, I'm out there.
Yeah.
If we're in, you know, knee deep of water and flooding, I'm there. And I think from my perspective and the business and the success and the longevity in my staff has been because they've seen that I am leading by example, I am on the tools, I'm doing what my troops are doing. I mean, some jobs I go to, unless people know that I'm the boss of the company, I don't tell them.
Yeah.
I'm just one of my people, and I do what they do. So.
How many staff do you have now?
I've got 47 staff.
Yeah, so it's a pretty extraordinary, pretty extraordinary number from where you started. You must look back on it and feel pretty chuffed at the amazing ride that you've gone on.
The only time I really start thinking about it is if I'm sort of entering business awards and I've got to go back to the beginning and I think, wow, did I actually do that? Or when I'm doing a podcast with someone like you who actually asks the questions and I think, wow, okay, did I actually achieve that? Now, just thinking, you know, I was one of these people at school that, you know, I wasn't the greatest at school. I didn't get the greatest marks. I didn't do a business degree. I didn't go to uni.
Mm.
This is a person that has never done any business education. I've been self-educated. And I always say to people, some people say to me, and there's nothing wrong with it, don't get me wrong, where they're sort of educating themselves and textbooking themselves. Mm. But to me, you either have it or you don't. Yeah. You've got that drive and you've got that initiative, I think.
And you're going to learn a lot more on the ground doing it than you are reading about
And honestly, I've made a lot of mistakes along the way. Mm. And there's things that I wish I had done differently, and educated myself, particularly with staff and HR and and thinking that, people have the same invested interests as I do, but I've learnt that they don't really. And I'm not saying everyone's like that, but, and any business owner will say to you about staff that they are an asset and they're a liability as well.
And people are motivated by different things as well, so it's not like a one sort of situation can suit everyone, even no matter what you might want to do in your staff and your business. Some people are motivated by money, others are motivated by time, achievement, like everyone's motivated by different things, which makes it more challenging too.
Yeah, and I think it's up to a really good business leader and owner to make sure that you're aware of what those motivations are in your people so you can work with that. And look, we're all motivated by money. That's why people work, But there's different motivations. Some like, remuneration with money. Some like praise. Some like appreciation. Mm. So it's up to me as a good business owner to make sure I identify that in every single one of my people. And I know every single one of my people's names, their family.
Yeah. You mentioned awards before. You've won quite a few now, including New South Wales Business Person of the Year at one point.
Yes.
How do you feel about that recognition when it comes up?
Look, that was the best day. That was the best day. But it was also bittersweet because I was a finalist in the New South Wales Businesswoman of the Year. On that particular day, I actually had just won a tender, which had to start that day.
Right.
So I got up. So I was up at 4:30 in the morning to go into town for these awards, won the award, couldn't celebrate with anyone because I had to come back to Penrith to start, and it was Penrith City Council tender that I'd been awarded, and that's massive, with all the lockups and everything. So I had to take the dress off and get straight into security uniform, put the boots on, the Magnum High Techs, and go straight out to work.
Yeah.
So it was a situation where it was surreal. I didn't sink in until a couple of days later where I went, oh, hang on, I'm a Businesswoman of the Year for New South Wales. And that was picked by the Premier as well.
Yeah, an extraordinary honour. And I guess takes into account, like we've talked about, the challenges you faced in the industry, but it hasn't necessarily evolved as much as it should, because I think you've mentioned there's 5,000 odd security businesses in New South Wales and only 50 of them are owned by women. So you're still very much a trailblazer in that industry. It hasn't quite caught up as far as getting out of the old doldrums.
Yeah, and when we say 50, that's purely a female's name on a master license.
Yeah.
So that female name may be in collaboration with her husband or may just be a name as a manager. I don't believe that there are 50 operational female-owned security companies. I believe there's only still a handful, which is, really quite ironic, because how many million people have we got in New South Wales? Yeah. 9 million, is that right?
Yeah, 9 million odd,
yep. And we've got less than 20 females running a security company. Like, there's something really wrong there.
Mm. So to that end, what advice would you give, and I'm sure you're asked this a lot, but what advice would you give to a young woman who's looking to start her own business, in whatever field it might be?
I truly believe that you should just take what opportunities. Also work out what your point of difference is, because there's so many competitors. I've got 63 security companies in this LGA alone. Mm. So I've always got to make sure that I know my point of difference. And obviously mine is now owning, being a female in security, which is a tick box now for a government department, ironically, it's female owned. So, which is great for me. But I think just having a go, don't be scared. Try not to be too wound up in the textbooks. And when I say that, because, you know, these business textbooks say, oh, within 3 years you should be here, and in 5 years you should start thinking of your exit strategy, and 10 years you should have your, you know, you should have this turnover and work on the business, not in the business. Do what you want to do and what you feel is right, and always take the opportunities that are thrown at you and think outside the square. And how my think outside the square is, for example, if I'm reading the newspaper, such as the Western Weekender, there might be something in there that says there was a building fire. So I do security, so I contact them and I say, I'm so sorry you've had a building fire, but do you need security? And 9 times out of 10, they go, yes, we do. Thanks for coming along. And that's how, and it's not about cold calling, it's about taking the opportunities and thinking outside the square. Everybody's advertising on Instagram and social media. So what's your point of difference in thinking outside the square? You know, who are you contacting? What media are you listening to and reading? I mean, with the Western Sydney Airport, like it's went out to tender and I won that. But right in the beginning, when they first started, how I got that site was I simply rang the real estate agent and said, I see that you're in charge of clearing all the houses at Badgerys Creek, getting the people out, and many of them have lived there for 35, 50 years. That was a big job too. And they've said, yeah, we actually do need security. So it was just picking those moments and
chasing your own opportunities.
Yeah, chasing your own opportunities. So just think and sit down and think about people that can help you. You know, you've got the Chamber of Commerce, you've got the CBD Corp, you've got the St. Mary's Town Centre, all of these things that I've joined, and they've assisted me growing my business.
Now, thinking about those 26 odd years you've been doing this, you must have seen some crazy situations and stories at times. Any in particular that come to mind that you must just shake your head and go, what did I just witness?
Oh, you know, I mean, how long have we got, Troy? I've seen some. I've been at events where we've been doing bag checks, where, you know, people have hidden what we call goon bags, you know, the bladder of a wine cask under a newborn baby to get it in, camel packs full of vodka. But I remember, and back in these days, mobile patrol officers had to carry firearms. And I remember I went out and purchased the same firearm as Mel Gibson in that movie. So I had this big shiny gun on me. And I remember I got an alarm call to South Penrith Public School. And it was during the day. And I'm thinking, oh, it's just a bug or something. So I just sort of drove in and I thought, what a great day. And I'm just walking to this alarm. And next minute I see this backside hanging out the window backwards. And I'm thinking, oh my God, this is a break and enter. So next minute I'm sort of gone really serious and I've yelled out, oi! And he's come back, he's hit his head on the window as he's coming out. He landed outside the window and there was half a drum kit on top of him. So he was actually stealing, it was obviously one of the music rooms. And he looked at me and he's taken off like a rabbit, like they usually do. And here I am with this half drum kit on the ground. So, I mean, I've seen so many, so many weird and wonderful things, mainly at events, you know, and the amount of lost children that we get where parents go, oh, hang on, she was there. I don't know where, you know, where they are. And I think, how could you lose, you know, a five-year-old that easily?
What about in terms of changes in the industry? You've obviously would have experienced, you know, significant legislation changes and rules and regulations and unions and then changes of government that sometimes result in changes as well. So there would have been pretty significant change in your industry from when you remember first starting back in the late 90s.
Yes. So when I first started, you'd go to a police station, you pay $35, you get a ticket and you become a security officer. And back in those days, security was absolutely riddled with underworld figures, people that had criminal history. You know, this is ironic. People that were actually guarding premises actually had criminal records. And yeah. And I knew one particular company, which doesn't exist anymore, and this person's not around anymore in the area that I know of. That particular company was looking after a hotel in our LGA that he actually had been convicted of holding up.
Right.
And they didn't know that he was the offender.
Yeah.
And he was there every Friday and Saturday night. So over the years, it has evolved. We now do 10 days training. We do criminal history checks. We do fingerprinting. Legislation has changed. It is so strict with us. We need, as master license holders, we have so much red tape that we've got to get to through to know with the regulations and the Security Industry Act. But mentioning the IR laws as well and the change of government, recently we had a change of government, federal government, which has significantly impacted, I believe, not only on my business but also other businesses. And I think another one just got through not long ago with Closing the Gap, which is... I believe is going to have significant impact on my business. And one of the things that they did do, I had a employee collective agreement, which was a very good one, well written, and the federal government decided that they would sunset my EBA.
Right.
The problem that I have is that 85% of my contracts are pre-tendered. So I go in and I say, for the 3 years, this is what it's going to cost you, and I price it. So this government has come in halfway through my contracts and made me go straight to the award, which meant that I had to go back to my tendered clients and tell them, I'm sorry, whatever I tendered there is now abolished and you now have to pay this.
Right.
And knowing that the government, they have already budgeted for these contracts, and it's now made it very difficult, where quite a number of them are saying that they're going to have to go back out to the marketplace. So ultimately, by the federal government saying that, you know, they've vetted it for employees, I possibly may have to put a lot of workers off because of it.
Yeah, that's extraordinary. But also, would you say then that it's probably harder to do business now than it ever has been at any time in your time owning a business?
Yeah, it is. I'm just constantly looking at these new IR laws that are coming through, which, you know, kudos to the government that they're thinking about employees. But a lot of business people that I am talking to now, including myself, are talking about either closing up shop, selling up, getting out, because it's just becoming way, way too hard, and the government is just becoming way too involved in our business. You know,
it feels like there's, and this happens often in a lot of sectors, where there's just an overcorrection occurs, where you go, okay, well, clearly there's some issues, you know, with employees having not having the advantage here, so let's even it up, and then it overcorrects and it becomes the opposite. And you need small business and medium business owners. If you don't have them, then they're the backbone of the country.
Absolutely. And we're the biggest employers. But during COVID, we lost about 5,000 security officers that went on and became Ubers or whatever.
Sure, yeah.
And they never came back. So we are, we have staff shortages, you know. Mm. And what they've gone and done is they've now put together a 10-day training course, which you have to do from where to go, which means that who has time to take 10 days out,
yeah,
unpaid, to do 10 days training to be a security officer? And it takes 8 to 10 weeks for your license to be processed. So from the beginning of training to when you are allowed to work is nearly 3 months.
Mm.
Tell me who can afford to do that? Nobody. And I have gone to our industry time and time again saying we need to do something about this, because yes, we need training, don't get me wrong, but nobody is going to go into our industry who you know, can leave their workplace for 3 months.
Yeah,
I mean, they can do weekend training, which is 5 weekends in a row, But again, it's the whole process is 3 months, and that's why we simply can't get security officers. And so it's harder for me because I've got to now work so much harder to keep my employees happy, do what they want, you know, give them what they want. So to me, it's really quite high maintenance, and to the point where I could almost feel burnout happening because I'm having to go that extra mile to keep them happy so they stay with me.
Yeah, we should be making it easier to run a business, not harder, and it seems like we're doing the opposite.
Oh, it's just crazy. And look, in all honesty, I mean, I've been doing it 26 years and I get up some mornings and I think, why? You know, I can just go and work for someone.
Yeah, not have the headaches.
And I'm fairly sure you've probably heard that over and over again with business people as well.
Yeah, it's certainly a significant issue at the moment, no question. What about Penrith? Penrith changed a lot in the 26 years you've run the business. In the last few years in particular, significant new developments. We're seeing the airport come together. What about the change in the city? Pretty extraordinary that you've witnessed?
Oh, look, I mean, the growth is phenomenal. Had you asked me 10 years ago, would we have so many apartment blocks? I would have said, no, that's only purely for Parramatta. Am I in favour of the quick growth? I think yes and no. I think the facilities we have in Penrith is great. We have whitewater rafting, we have rowing, we have the iFly, we have Nepean River, we have so many amazing tourist attractions here. And really we should be getting more tourism than we do, and hopefully the new Snowfield will bring it in. Do I believe that the roads are accommodating the amount of population at growth? No, I don't. I think it hasn't caught up as quickly as it should have, and I think that we have a lot of traffic problems in the area. So, but you know, we've got a housing crisis, and having more people in the area will be great for local business and economy. So I'm sort of a bit on the fence with that,
I think a lot of people are. What about your business? What's next? What's next for Nepean Regional Security?
Ooh,
in the next,
maybe I might let the cat out of the bag. I don't know. Look, I always said, and I made a promise to myself, that when I got to 25 years, I'd start looking at an exit plan. Here I am 26 years. I know that I say every New Year's Eve, that's it, I'm packing up shop. And so I think what I'm wanting to do is move more to the technology side of security. If the government keeps making it harder and harder and harder, I don't really want to continue employing people. I'd love to, but it's just way too hard. So I want to sort of start looking at AI technology. I've just moved into solar camera towers, which have got AI technology in them.
Yep.
And they are replacing manpower, certainly at construction sites and home buildings and beaches, and you'll see them in parklands and things like that. So I'm trying to move more to the technology. I want to try and this is really difficult for me. I say this all the time, try and work out a work-life balance, but I'm a micromanager.
Yeah, I
can't help it. I'm still reading emails at 3 o'clock in the morning, so yeah.
Question we always finish with, how would Gina Field like to be remembered in Penrith?
I would like to be remembered as someone that inspired young ladies to maybe think of different job roles and have a belief in themselves that it's okay to go into a male-dominated industry and be successful and start a business and be successful and believe in themselves. I want to be, as you said, like the trailblazer for young women to believe in themselves and have the confidence to know that whatever they set their mind to, they can do.
Well, I think you've done all of that. It's been a really great story and a great business success story, and let's hope it continues for many years. Gina, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been great. Thank you.
And I hope you enjoyed our chat. On the Record is produced by The Western Weekender and recorded at Studio 103 in Penrith. To hear future episodes, search Western Weekender wherever you listen to podcasts and make sure you hit subscribe. Check out westernweekender.com.au and we will see you next time.